I think we're recording. So
okay, great. So hi, how are you doing today? Yes, I was a writing grant for the Seeding Justice grant that was previously the McKenzie River Group MRG. So I just whipped it out in like a day or like just today. So yeah. Very happy. I mean, there are some things I probably could have added. Like one question they asked of, and who do you partner with? And I forgot to say Black Beyond the Binary. And we've been working with them to produce their Night Out for Safety and Liberation for like the last 4 years. And I think that's something they would have enjoyed knowing. So, but overall, I'm happy with it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I know you're doing all the things.
All the things.
That's what happens yeah. when you start a nonprofit.
Yeah. When your name is Andre Middleton and you run Friends of Noise, you end up doing all the things.
Yeah. So we're here to talk about you, how you started Friends of Noise, who you are.
Okay.
That sounds deep in a therapeutic sort of way. But, you know, tell me, guide me through, you know, you as a child.
Mm-hmm. Well,
how you got to where you're at.
Cool. Let me start off by saying, hi, everybody. My name is Andre Middleton. I'm the executive director of Friends of Noise. We are an all ages arts nonprofit that really seeks to amplify the voices of young people and create pathways for them to enter into and be sustained by an equitable, inclusive, all ages music ecosystem here in the Portland metro area. I and about 8 friends, co-board members started Friends of Noise back in 2015. I used to be on the community engagement team for the Regional Arts and Culture Council. And in that capacity, I was tasked with producing a music form to help engage more musicians into the grant process and again, being supported by the Regional Arts and Culture Council. And that event was called The Happening. And I got to pick the panelist and the MC. And out of that, you know, afternoon long event, the topic that people most wanted to continue to talk about, even after that was over, was the lack of all ages spaces. Back in 2014, there was a really popular club called Backspace, which is on the bus mall right around the corner from like Ground Control, and it was, you know, all ages, no booze, a lot of poetry, a lot of singer songwriters, but really just a space for young people to come and know that it was their space. So it was their art on the walls. You know, they were running the till. They had a really hands-on. And when that closed down, it created a real vacuum for what were spaces that were designed for and by young people where they could take their first steps into really having third spaces of their own. I mean, right now, a lot of kids, unfortunately, are relegated to, you know, school, home, sports, even the arts. We're still focused in at school. It's the school play. It's
the
school.
Exactly,
right.
So it's always, sorry to interrupt you, it's often, you know, the money's going to football.
So yeah, right? Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we were really focused on how can we just get an all-ages space going. And at the time, our main focus was, let's get a storefront. Let's just set up a stage, get a PA, and just let kids rock out. But in talking with a variety of community stakeholders, realized that there's so many more pieces in that. You know, I mean, obviously, in any music ecosystem around the world, pretty much, alcohol consumption and the sale of alcohol is a driving economic force in music and entertainment like that. So we said, well, how are we going to do that without selling alcohol? So we became really itinerant. We said, you know, let's not get our own space. Let's just buy a PA and make it portable so we can go to a variety of spaces. And the nice thing about that was that it didn't force young people to always come to us. It enabled and empowered us to go to them. So our first event was at a community space in St. John's. Our second event was at a park in Southwest Portland. So we've really been able to go all over, whether it is out in Fairview, St. John's, Cully, Inner Southeast, Lloyd Center area. We've been really blessed that we've been able to go all over the place. So, you know, my love of music came from being a young person in Brooklyn, New York. That's where I'm from. The first concert my mom ever took me to was to go see Fishbone. And I might have been 16 or 17, and she snuck me into the club, and I was just blown away about that live music experience. Became a lifelong Fishbone fan after that. You know, I've always loved music. I learned to play the clarinet in junior high school and high school. I, you know, I did private lessons here and there. But, you know, listening to early, you know, 1970s, 80s radio had a real impact on me. I remember when Prince's first album came out. I remember listening to Rapper's Delight and the Sugar Hill Gang. So music has definitely been the soundtrack. And I feel lucky that I've been exposed to a variety of music. I mean, I went to some pretty white schools growing up. So I was introduced to Def Leppard and the Stones and Queensryche, and, you know, obviously moved out here in the late 90s and or early 90s, and, you know, the grunge era was happening. So really getting into, you know, Nirvana and, you know, Sunny Day Real Estate and Tad and all that kind of stuff. So that's one thing that I really appreciate about being a Black man in Portland is that, you know, if Friends of Noise has a musical taste, it's super broad. And that means that we're interacting with a broad variety of kids who can see that I'm not leaning in one direction or another. So we have hip hop shows. We've got punk shows. We've got singer-songwriter shows. We've got house shows. We've got metal. We've done metal shows. We've done jazz shows. We've done blues shows. So really feel lucky that, you know, the width and breadth of music that interests me also interests them. So that's been a lot of fun.
Thank you for that. And, you know, you mentioned that some of the youth don't have a space, or they had one space that closed when you were young. I mean, other than your mom sneaking you into concert, did you have some sort of space? Was it only at school? Is that where?
I know you can't see my head shaking, but my head is shaking to say no. Growing up, there was no independent all ages space in Brooklyn, New York. Maybe I just couldn't find it. Maybe it was up in Manhattan. Maybe it was in the Bronx. Maybe it was on the Upper West Side. But, you know, I took the train everywhere, so I can't recall that. And that's funny you should mention that. When we talk with adult musicians, adult partners, their eyes go wide when they hear about our programming. And they say, God, I wish I had something like that when I was growing up, because it would have given me more of a head start into the, not just the career, but the life of where music is a big part of it. You know, whether you're just, you know, tiddling on a, you know, on a guitar at home, or you have a piano or a keyboard, having access to spaces where you can freely express yourself and see other people express themselves, I think can be a real catalyst for young people having a lifetime relationship with music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, music is not just the sound, it's expression of who you are, where you're from, who you want to be. I mean, there's a big component, but it's also community. And that's something that I really like about you and this organization is you're doing music, but you're also doing community building. And so can you talk to me a little bit about that? Like, what does community mean to you? And, you know, how does Friends of Noise play into that community building?
Well, when Friends of Noise started, like I said earlier, it was an assemblage of a variety of stakeholders from the community, whether it was local record labels, radio stations, venues, arts educators. And that level of collaboration, that level of working together to build something brand new from scratch really appealed to me. I spent some time in the Seattle area, and there's this great facility called Youngstown that is in kind of like the West Seattle Delridge neighborhood. And what they did, they took over an old school. They put three stories of housing in the top three parts of the building. And then in the bottom floor, they had close to 10 different nonprofits, arts education, legal aid, a charter school. They even had a nonprofit that was all about the environment, environmental justice. They had a tool library. And that was the first time I'd seen a hub of activity where they were allowing different organizations to live side by side and collaborate. And it wasn't very me driven, it was very us driven. Mm-hmm. And so I brought that energy into our early discussions about Friends of Noise. It's like, you know, how do we do this? Not just looking out for ourselves, but how are we sharing our privilege and mm-hmm. sharing access to what we're, our energy and what we're about. So early on, just, you know, us getting our nonprofit number, our 501c3 number, was a labor of love by five or six different people. Others doing their research online. We couldn't afford to get an attorney to do it. So we were just, you know, we did all the research online. We copy and pasted some things. We held a fundraiser at Mississippi Studios with a great band called Explode Into Colors. And they were an amazing band back in the early 2000s, and they came together to do a reunion show, and they supported us here in Portland and a venue called The Smell down in LA. And we got like $3,000 out of that night, and that paid for our 501c3. So that was a big thing. A big part of what we do also is that once we started assembling equipment, right now, most of it's in storage somewhere. But once we started getting equipment, I was like, why is his equipment sitting in storage when it can be out into the world? So we've been loaning equipment to other nonprofits, to other community organizations for block parties, for just backyard music events, for poetry events. And if there's any exchange of money, it's usually to pay like a teen sound engineer just to make sure that nothing gets broken. So we love that we're able to do that. Like I said, we've partnered with organizations like Black Beyond the Binary, Apano, Outside In, Outside the Frame, so many just great youth community-based organizations that are just looking for ways to engage their young people. And it's, you know, we've always had also the idea that the young people we work with are not a number. They're not, you know, they're not a stub. They are living, breathing people. So all the kids that work with us, none of them have registered to work with us. We don't see them as ours. So we share them. We turn them on to other organizations. We really see ourselves as being part of a constellation of stars and of orgs that, you know, if you just see one star, it's when you have to lean back a little bit, sure. And then you can see the constellation that they form. And that's when you go, ah, you know, that's when you kind of get the awe factor. Yeah.
So they're learning collaboration, you know, not just internally with Friends of Noise, that you have to collaborate with performers, producers, event venues, all that. But then they're also collaborating with other organizations and seeing how in order for community to be successful, you know, it does take a village. It does take all kinds of people coming together. And even with music, you know, we have music, we have food, we have art, we have sometimes advocacy, you know, we have music and then we have social cause that's tied into it. Where do you see Friends of Noise going? Where do you want it to go? I know that's a big question for you.
Real talk, I would love it if Friends of Noise continues to evolve into something that's akin to a scouting organization, but that isn't based in, you know, dogmatic religious and, you know, indoctrination or a pseudo military, paramilitary organization.
I love those caveats. Yeah. I just want to make sure.
So, you know, and my dream is that at some point Friends of Noise has a venue, and that venue is a clubhouse. It's a safe space. It is a space where kids are learning, where they're coming together, where they're teaching each other, where there's a lot of peer education. But as a scouting organization, we would love it if we had a venue in every state in the country where young people are maybe starting to tour between states because they know that they've got a safe space, whether it's in California or Washington or Idaho. You know, right now, there is a great venue in Seattle called the Vera Project. We've been involved with Tree Fort out in Idaho, and we love Wow Hall down in Eugene. And you know, the idea is like, well, what if we could arrange it so that young people could go to those other venues and know that there were, you know, non-predatory, non-exploitative means of practice where they could perform for a crowd of their peers just in another area. So that's a big dream that we have, is to be able to start branching out.
The other thing you're doing is you're building resumes for those folks. So by the time they're 18, 19, they have a resume of all these things they've done, all these events they've done, all these people and organizations they've worked with.
And bigger than a resume, because a resume is still, you know, enabling a participant in a capitalistic system.
Sure.
It's really about them building a self-esteem and their own level of experience that they can boldly, with self-authority, walk into a room, whether they're gay, straight, old, young, and say, I know how to do this. I know how to set up that PA. I know how to stop that feedback. I know how to sing with authority. That's the biggest thing we get out of this. Granted, we've had at least a couple of students or participants use a portfolio of their work to get into college. I just had a call from a young man who is applying for a job, nothing to do with music, but he valued his time with us. He valued the mentorship and the modeling of leadership. They said, I want Andre and Friends of Noise to be as part of my, to be a reference for me. So that was, I was knocked out that young person continued to see themselves be part of our community. You know, in addition to music, we try and support young people in a variety of creative endeavors when in the music adjacent. So whether it's making posters or flyers, there's a young person who recently graduated from Grant High School and they used a portfolio of over a dozen posters that they made for us to get into Cal Arts. We're really thrilled that we're giving young people multiple on-ramps and they're taking those on-ramps and running with them wherever they choose to go to.
That's all that wonderful. It's wonderful work and it should be continued and it should grow. And, you know, I think about the love of music. I think about the love of community. And then I think about it sort of this, it comes back as well, because then they're going out in the world. They're then building their own community, you know, showing people how a community can be built. And I like to think that continues, it kind of gets paid forward. So I know that, you know, you have had jobs in the art arena and the music arena, that sort of thing, but you've never opened your own nonprofit before. So can you just talk a little bit about that? Like someone who's listening, you know, and also, but people don't realize, I talked to someone about this today. When you open a nonprofit, it's almost harder than opening a for-profit business because you have regular business things. You also have this other cause. You have IRS rules, DOJ rules. So, you know, where were you at or where are you in balancing administration with passion and learning how to do, you know, nonprofit formation type things, compliance type things?
I'll be real with you. I am in the middle of not quite there and on my way. It has been a learning process. I want to give props to my mom that she taught me how to be an entrepreneur. I was a young person who had, you know, a newspaper route when I was, you know, 10 or 12, or I was washing windows at 13 or 14. When I lived in Portland in my undergrad years, I had a walking billboard company called Boardwalkers, where it was a sandwich board company. I'd walk around town promoting small businesses. So there's always been that kind of entrepreneurial spirit in me, and this endeavor definitely fed into that and nurtured that. Yes, being in a nonprofit or starting a nonprofit, there's a lot of hoops, there's a lot of red tape. And, you know, one could say that, you know, getting my BA in arts, and most artists are somewhat entrepreneurs, most musicians are entrepreneurs, definitely prepared me for, you know, a part of that process. I'll confess, I haven't filled out every 1099 form correctly. I haven't filled out every, you know, 990 form correctly. So it's very collaborative. Luckily, I have a board of directors who's super supportive. Luckily, the first board of directors, we were all hands on deck, very collaborative. I don't think I've ever felt that it's all rested on my shoulders alone. Even though at times it did, because like at the beginning of the pandemic, everybody was isolated. So there was definitely a moment they're like, wow, are we going to be able to continue, or are we going to have to pull back and figure out how we're going to do that? You know, at that time, I had some great allies and friends that helped me build a portable PA system that I was able to take to protests throughout the Portland metro area. I did not have the knowledge to do that myself. I didn't know how to hook up a couple of car batteries and to like an inverter and create a AC current that could power speakers and a mixer. So, you know, this hasn't happened by myself. It won't happen by myself in the future. We just actually just hired our first employee as a grant writer, development person, and she's done a great job. So thrilled to have Janice. Shout out, Janice. Hope Ezra's doing great. It's been wonderful to be able to start to expand and realize that while I am an executive director, I'm still a member of a team. And I think that kind of humility is only positive. You know, my mom told me at a very early age, no big guys, no little yous. You know, in any collaborative environment, if it's more than two people in a room working on the same project, the toxicity of a big guy and you're a little you will undermine the success of the project. So I try and steer clear of that as often as I can.
Sure. Yeah. Your mom sounds wise.
Mom's the best.
smart woman. You mentioned or alluded to creatives and being artistic and how they're entrepreneurs, and that's true. And I believe that. You know, I sometimes teach a class, Your Art is Your Business. We talk about that. So I guess my question for you is, when you're talking to creative youth, you know, maybe they have a parent who's like, you're not going to make a living being a musician. Why are you doing this? Why can't you be a doctor like your dad? Or why can't you do this? You know, are you, and not in a bad way, but are you kind of like, look, if you want to do music, you can do music, but you have to treat it like a business.
Well, in all fairness, I think that the young people that enter the Friends of Noise ecosystem, they are well beyond parents who are not encouraging and not loving and not giving them the resources that they need. So most of the young people who find themselves in our orbit and stick with it and stay with it, they're not getting that message. So to really answer your question, I try and bring my full self to being an executive director and a mentor with Friends of Noise. So if you were just, you know, a fly on the wall when we've got a couple of seconds and we're talking about life, I'm giving them my all. You know, we're talking about what, you know, how young women should be treated in the music industry. And we're talking about the impact of white supremacy and the impact of toxicity, the impact of this being a male-dominated industry, how we are hoping to rewrite those rules. I am doing my best to not shield them, but literally, you know, erase and rewrite what it's like for a young person of color or a young woman of color or a queer person to get into what heretofore has been an extremely white male, money-dominated ecosystem that chews people up, exploits them, and spits them out and looks for the next victim.
That's a good way to put it.
Right. And I think that Portland in particular, especially coming out of the pandemic, has the real chance of not going back to business as usual, not going back to, you know, the analog cafe where women were afraid to go there because there was a predatory vibe about the venue itself and that the staff there were not supportive. How do we get to a new model that is guaranteeing time and not just being a door split? How are we getting to a model where we're looking at different ways of paying for things as opposed to alcohol driven? You know, I've never been to, you know, music halls in Europe, but I've heard of them where music is supported by the community because they see the arts as being a driver of community cohesion. You know, right now, I think that in the Portland metro area, we need to have more art spaces outside of the downtown core. That they're, you know, where their primary goal is not to sell you, you know, a rum and coke every 5 minutes, but the goal.
Well, and an accessible price as well.
Exactly.
So that the people, ordinary people can afford, you know, tickets to things.
Right, right. So that's why I think that I really hope that Portland and other cities can decentralize the music infrastructure so that is in an alignment with, like, say, local parks and local community centers and even local schools. To where it's not just the parents of the kids who are in that school that are coming, but how are we getting neighbors, friends, allies? I mean, I've seen young people at our shows completely beam because when they look across the crowd, they just don't see their family, they don't see their uncle, but they're seeing complete strangers that are vibing and that are loving their creativity. And I think that is the strongest reaffirmation that we're giving our young people who participate in us is just feeling that love. You know, young people crave the sense of accomplishment. you know, they crave that. You know, they're slowly being pushed and ushered into the next level of their lives. And some kids get that from getting an A in a class. Some kids get that from getting paid, and, you know, whatever the incentive is, I think young people crave to know that I'm doing a good job or this is working. And I have never seen smiles that are just deep, happy smiles at the end, except for at the end of a concert where the whole team comes together, whether it's the sound crew or the musicians or their best friends who hang around at the end, and seeing, you know, a group of, like, sometimes between, you know, it could be 5 people, it could be 10 people, but seeing them just light up and say, wow, we did that. And it's immediate gratification. It's not, you know, you turn a paper and you're waiting a couple of days to get the results. They got to see people vibing. They got to see people dancing. They got to see people smiling. They got to hear that applause and to know that it wasn't fueled, like I said, by alcohol, that it was fueled by just people saying, we want to support you. We love what you're about. We just did an open mic at Portland Center Stage last night, and there had to have been 50 people in there. White, black, gay, purple hair, black hair, people with disabilities. You know, it was a truly inclusive and open space. And they were all there. Adults came on the mic and youth came on the mic. And it was such a embodiment and manifestation of mutual aid in a way, mm-hmm. of just of an opportunity to share love, an opportunity for young people to share their poetry, to share their music, and to have it be embraced. It's a really magical thing to see how that is what's really driving them to keep on going. Not words that I say, oh, you can do this, you'll be fine, don't worry about it. But that's what I think is a real driver.
Well, it's the word that you used earlier, empowering. You know, you're empowering youth, and they take that with them, you know, whatever they're doing next. When you get one certificate or you get mm-hmm. one pat on the back, it's cute, but you're not taking that with you as a memory, a skill set, a confidence level. You're giving them the power to understand that they not only deserve to be there, they deserve to thrive.
Right, right. It's interesting. I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and there was a band back in the day called... there was Junior High, there was Cracker Bash, but there's a local musician named Sean Krogan, and he's legendary. Grew up in Gresham, lives in Portland. He's just legendary. And there's another artist named Pete Krebs, and he was in a band called Hazel. And they played up and down the coast, Satyricon, Pine Street, up in Seattle. And a few years ago, Pete was diagnosed with cancer. And most musicians don't have years and years of health insurance piled up. So it was GoFundMes and it was emails. And I got to see firsthand the community rally behind Pete and get him the resources he need to beat cancer. And he's beat cancer and we're thrilled that he's still with us. But the reason why I brought up Sean Krogan was because about 4 years ago when I was starting Friends of Noise, he posted about 50 to maybe 100 pictures of backstages and green rooms in the Portland metro area where he just had his little camera and was taking pictures of the people in there. And I saw a lot of faces that I recognized from a lot of different bands. When I put those two different ideas together, a variety of people who had shared experiences by being in these hallowed rooms of backstages and green rooms, plus with the community that came together to support Pete Krebs, it reminded me of how the difference between, you know, poverty and sustainability for people of color, for immigrants, for refugees, for people in poverty is like one paycheck, or it's one car accident, or it's one insurance bill that isn't covered. And sadly, a lot of those people don't have a network of people who can come in and say, here's $400 to take care of your car. Or here's $1,000 to, you know, to get the medicine that you need. And I'm hoping that Friends of Noise continues to evolve where 10 years from now, you're going to have a network of black and brown kids, of queer kids who've been playing music with each other, whether it's in the road or in venues or in backyards or in open mics, where that becomes that sustainable network for them. You know, and it's cross genre. It's not just hip hop. It's punk. It's this. It's where black kids get to be punky and they get to play with guitars, and it's white kids that are making hip hop, and it's queer kids who are singing in front of not just a queer crowd, but maybe it is just a queer crowd, but their allies are there in solidarity and support. That's, I think, is going to be the legacy of Friends of Noise. And it's hard to predict when that's going to happen, but I really hope that the young people that are just playing a DIY show under a bridge with a generator, that they're still in touch, they're still supporting each other. Obviously, maybe social media will help make those connections happen, but I really think the glue will be that shared experience and that feeling of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. Well, another thing is you're embracing these kids for who they are. And so if they don't get that in other places, you know, they're getting it there. So if they're black and gay and love punk rock, they can be black and gay and love punk rock and do what they're doing. You know, they're not, because in a world of, and I don't know, I'm not black, but in a world of racism and microaggressions and systematic race, I mean, on and on and on and on, this is now a kid who can be in an environment and can be themselves, can showcase their talents, doesn't have to change or do something different. They're very much, and in their music, this is who I am. So there's a beauty to that as well. There's the community component, but there's also being your authentic self and being celebrated as that.
100%, 100%. And I really hope that they are getting those experiences other places. I hope that we are normalizing, mm-hmm. allowing people to bring their full selves in any environment. You know, that's why I'm happy when I hear that there are BSUs at local high schools, or that you have, you know, groups that, or you have young people who say, you know, guess I'm in this group and I'm in that group and mm-hmm. I'm that group over there.
Yeah.
I am multimodal. I am multifaceted, and I'm not going to allow anybody, especially politicians, especially the state. And sadly, sometimes, especially their family, tell them, no, you can't be that. You have to be this.
And that's what we do with people, is it's this monolithic,
right.
Oh, you're black, so this is what you do or what you like, right. Or if you don't do that or like that, then why are you doing that? Right.
And music and all arts is the great uniter, is the great communicator. You know, it's a great means of giving people a window into culture that is very passive, and it kind of sinks into your brain. Next thing you know, you're humming that song, and I didn't know I even knew that song. I mean, that's why I love, you know, just vibing off of music and being able to listen to music from Japan or Korea or Ireland or wherever, and to know that that has inserted a piece of someone else's lived experience in me in a way that's going to bubble up and express itself at some point I don't know yet. And knowing that young people are doing the same thing with even greater access and veracity than we did when we were their age, I think is very encouraging for the future.
Mm-hmm. And I asked you a little bit about this earlier. You know, you talked about Brooklyn and your mom and stuff like that. But I mean, how does Andre as a youth relate to Andre at present?
Oh, wow. You know, in many ways, I haven't changed a lot. And I say that because I feel very privileged and fortunate that my traumas have not been life altering, you know? And I think that when there is a big break between who we were as a young person, who we are as an adult, because something happened, you know, something major happened. So in that context, like I said, I was someone who was listening to Toto 1 second and, you know, playing, you know, some concerto on my clarinet the next. So like I said, music has been a very broad, important part of my life. You know, my favorite movie growing up was Beat Street. Still, I could watch that every day. Another great movie that I loved growing up that's in my top 10, if not my top one, is The Blues Brothers. And just, you know, being able to vibe to that and listen to that over and over and over again has provided me with a lot of joy. So that's one thing I wish I could figure out how to add to this current music scene. I wish that young people could hear the music of their local bands more. You know, right now there's a couple of bands like Chainsaw Girl or Rhododendron or Kill Michael, for example, where they played a lot this summer. And I think that a lot of young people have start the key into the beginning of the song. So I know what song this is going to be. It would be great if I, you know, whether it was, you know, I mean, granted, we all, no one has MP3s anymore. You know, I just wish it was the way that people, like when we were growing up, you know, we'd have our headphones on and we'd be on the bus or riding our bike and we'd just hear it. I wish there was a way that young people could hear the music of the current music scene in a way that it could really sink in and that they'd be singing along at their concerts. That's what my hopes are.
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to go to our questions.
Okay.
We ask every guest
great.
These questions.
Bring it on.
So the first one is, what's a quote or mantra that you live by?
Every day, in some small way, I'm getting better and better. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been saying that since I was in my teens. Every day, and it could be the tiniest of ways, I'm getting better and better.
That's a good one, and it's an important one. What's your favorite childhood memory?
My favorite childhood memory is getting a blue ball for Christmas. We were living on St. Felix Street in Brooklyn, New York. And I remember my mom saying, what do you want for Christmas or your birthday? It was one of those two holidays. And I said, I want a blue themed holiday or, you know, birthday. And I remember it was this plastic ball and it had, different shapes like stars, circles, squares, equal sign, plus sign. And it was very tactile so that the shapes were raised from the main level of the ball. And I just remember seeing that ball and saying, wow, this is it. And I totally remember that.
And was it like a handball or dodgeball?
I say it was kind of like dodgeball size, but not quite dodgeball size. I mean, I have a lot of great memories. Another great memory was that I worked when I was 14 or 15, my mom sent me to a labor camp. And when I say labor camp, it was like a pro labor camp. So we're singing labor songs and we're all about learning about unions and the labor movement.
Your mom sounds great.
Yeah, my mom was great. And as part of this camp, we had to get in, build our own tents, and then we had to work in the camp to spell the adult campers when they were like going to do laundry. And I just loved the camaraderie that was built with all these, you know, black and brown inner city kids and some older, you know, some white, you know, more privileged kids. But I really loved that first exposure to camaraderie and collective action and, you know, labor not being about money, but labor being about contributing and it having a purpose. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget that.
It reminds me of Cesar Chavez used to say, it's not about the lettuce, it's about the people.
No doubt.
It's kind of a similar, you know.
No doubt.
What's a failure or mistake that you made that actually turned out for the best?
Oh, boy. Okay. I'm going to get real with this. My daughter. I have a daughter out of wedlock that was not intended. You know, despite some of the static between me and her mom over the years, we're in a great place now. And I love my daughter Madeline a ton, and she loves me. And all of the girlfriends and parents and aunts and uncles that have come into her life have given me, through her, one of the largest families I've ever had. So that's definitely been a plus.
What issue or issues keep you up at night? And knowing you and even just some of the answers you gave, probably a lot of things.
I mean, I try to sleep well. I could think of some times where I've been up at night. I remember when I was in undergrad, world hunger was a big thing for me. I just said, the rate that we're going with not caring about the climate, you know, dust bowls are getting bigger. I could see droughts happening, you know, just prescient. And it still frightens me how we are not going to be able to feed ourselves because we are trifling and playing with finite resources. And technically, there's more than enough to go around, you know, but we are still beholden to a capitalist hoarding, you know, paradigm of scarcity that we're shackled to. And that's something that still keeps me up, that there's no excuse, there's no reason for people not to have a roof over their heads, people not to have food in their bellies and clothes on their back. Mm. And yet and still, the leaders, whether they're right, left, doesn't care, we are still complicit in that still happening.
Mm-hmm. And clean water that doesn't have lead or other poisons.
Completely complicit.
Yeah. What are you reading or watching these days?
I'll be real with you. I haven't read a book in a while just because too busy. And I do a lot of my entertainment happens passively in the background. So, but I've been vibing over Andor, which is a new Star Wars show on Disney Plus. It is the bomb.com. I don't know if you people are, I'm a complete geeky nerd. I've loved science fiction and Star Wars since I was a kid. I remember I saw Star Wars at least 10 times when I was in junior high school. Come to school on Monday. Did you see it this weekend? Yeah, I saw it again this weekend. And kids be like, oh, I got to go see it again. But right now, Andor is amazing. It's like a prequel to Rogue One, which was a prequel to A New Hope. So, you know, the first movie where you saw Darth Vader, you know, board the ship and ask Princess Leia, where are the plans of the Death Star? Well, Rogue One was the movie where they stole those plans and got them to Princess Leia, who put them inside through C-3PO. Mm-hmm. Or no, R2-D2. Sorry, R2-D2. Well, Andor is the backstory of the spy who really was the help facilitate the stealing of the Death Star plans. And it's riveting. It's great. It's real. It's really, really good. I highly endorse it.
That was a good recommendation.
Thank you. I tried.
What about Mandalorian? Do you like that?
I love the first one. Didn't have time for the other ones. I am so busy that I have to be very judicious with my media consumption. So
There's endless content too.
God, we're in peak content.
And if there's a choice of live music versus that, I mean, live music is probably...
For real. I hate to date this because who knows when this will air, but in mid-October of 2022, the Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble teamed up with a local group called Brown Calculus. Full disclosure, Brown Alice was on the Friends of Noise board of directors, so I just want to make sure that there's no conflict there. And the jazz, a variety of local artists, Esperanza Spalding, some other folks, rearranged some of Brown Calculus's music for our full jazz ensemble, and they played at Polaris Hall, and it was magical. It was magical. And the best part about it was that it was a one-off. This, you know, jazz ensemble and Brown Calculus are not joining up and hitting the road and playing, you know, Benaroya Hall or, you know, the Hollywood Bowl, but they could because it was that amazing, but you had to be there. And that's the thing about live music is that you never know what's going to happen. And it was magical. In fact, I've run into people who were there and we see each other and like, yo, last Thursday was dope. And we would talk about that show. Haven't done that in years. When was the last time you just ran into a friend and you know that you saw the same thing and you had the same experience and just seeing them had all those memories flood back into your head and you're back in that moment. That's what I love about live music is that if we can get, you know, a couple, you know, 50, 60 people in a room to experience what's happening right there and hopefully they're friends, their paths cross, and they can have that connection again, then that's another connection. They're building that friendship. They're building that connection. It was amazing.
Amazing. I hear you. I mean, I didn't go. That's not a guilt trip.
No shade.
But live music can transgress your soul.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally feel a certain way. Andy and I just saw Florence and the Machine, and I love her. But, she's highly commercialized now. I get that. But still... she is someone who, after the concert, I feel like a new person.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a therapy moment or a soulful moment. And that's what we need. That's what we need now more than ever.
Especially our young people. They have been inundated with social media, with likes, with dislikes, with shares. We've got to get them to realize that, connecting through, a 6-inch by 3-inch screen on your cell phone isn't really going to hack it. And it's not going to hack it when you get sick. It's not going to hack it when you're depressed.
It's great to have on your iPhone a playlist, but to see a live jazz band is an entirely different experience.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, that's it for the questions. But the last kind of thing is, who do you want to give a shout out to in the community?
Oh, wow. I'm going to shout out a woman named Neely Yoshi. Neely runs a nonprofit called Outside the Frame. And last year, we had a bit of conflict. And it hurts my heart in ways that I wasn't prepared to acknowledge that we are not in sync the way we were in the past. And, you know, to some ways, it'd be easy for me to say it's mostly her fault. In some ways, it's probably, I know that I've contributed to it. But I talked with the mutual friend and, you know, I will be the one who will try to break the ice and to heal. And even though that healing has always been my modus operandi and I've communicated that to her, I hope that we can heal. And if I could shout out one person in the world right now, I'd want it to be Neely. And we weren't like best of friends. I mean, I've been to her house once and we've broken bread and we're cool. But yeah, that's the name that jumps to mind.
Cool. It's been wonderful having you. You're doing great work.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation.
Of course.
You're doing great work too.
Oh, thank you.
So I don't know if I had an opportunity to do like the prerequisite, you know, but you can find Friends of Noise on our website, www.friendsofnoise.org. You can find us on Instagram. Please like us. We're always trying to, you know, that's the new way of advertising and sharing what we're doing. So please follow us on Instagram. That's also at Friends of Noise. Just Friends of Noise, all one word, Friends of Noise. We've got a big year coming up. We're going to hire a program coordinator. We're going to try and set up a calendar of concerts that will be like, we can promote concerts by the month throughout the whole year. We're hoping to turn our Sound Squad Supreme into a jobs program, where we're teaching kids valuable skills, soft skills as well as hard skills, and pushing them out into the world and having them share. So that's what Friends of Noise is about. Like I said, you can find us on our website. We have a calendar of events on our website as well, so you can know what the next like three or four shows are going on, where they're happening. And thanks for having me. I really appreciate every second I was here.
Absolutely. It was a great conversation. And I feel proud to have you in our community, and you're actually doing the work. You know, people talk, you're talking and you're doing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.